also can smell things like diarrhea. We'll have certain things that we're like, oh, I don't like the smell of that. That's a bad kind of diarrhea, as opposed to a sort of more gentle kind of diarrhea. And we accept that, and we use that technique. But we very rarely actually take our instincts, if you like, from the smell of the coat and the owners, and go the next step and ask about their pet's smoking exposure. And it's been something that's kind of always bothered me. Why do we not ask? It's just become part very much of when you go to the doctors now, you will be routinely asked, do you smoke, do you drink? And they've made that just a standardized question that everybody gets asked, and it makes it easier to ask. What we already know about the exposure to smoke that these pets are having is it is increased with the increased risk of certain diseases. And this has been known about for probably nearly 20 years now. We know it increases the risk of lung cancer. We know it increases the risk of cancer within the nose or the sinuses. And what we've got up here is a picture. It's basically a CT scan through the nose of the dog. And we've seen a few kind of cross sections of noses of dogs already today. So hopefully I won't need to explain the anatomy too much. But you can see on the right hand side of the image, that's your kind of normal nasal structure. And then on the left side of this dog's nose, it's just been completely effaced by a soft tissue density. And this was a dog with cancer of the nose. And I see that a lot, okay? We see a lot of nose cancers, particularly in the longer nose breeds, as Andrew was talking about, the sort of squish nose breeds don't tend to get it quite so much. We know it increases the risk of lymphoma, and lymphoma is a cancer of the white blood cells. So it's a very extensive cancer, and we know it increases it in cats. And we also know that in cats with squamous cell carcinoma, which is a cancer that very commonly occurs around the facial areas, ears, noses, and so forth, exposure to smoke increases the risk of certain cancer gene expressions in these. So it probably predisposes to the cancer or changes the way the cancer is going to react to the drugs that we're going to give it. They've done studies that have looked at little dogs that were exposed to smoke, and they found that, surprise, surprise, if you're exposed to smoke in your airways, you get more inflammatory cells and you get the tar and the nastiness that comes with passive smoking. And it's always surprised me that nobody really wanted to talk about this. Nobody really wanted to talk about it with owners when you can smell it so clearly. Now, obviously, there's an intrinsic logic to this. You know, you kind of, people think, well, come on, Claire, this is really blooming obvious. Why on earth are you researching this? Of course they're exposed to passive smoke, because they're in the room with the smoker, the smoke is wafting about the room, and they're inhaling it, okay? But the funny thing is vets, when you ask them, say, well, there's no evidence, there's no proof that they're exposed. You know, we can say that they've got it on their coat, but there's no actual proof. And there's some of these studies that have been done, they're all questionnaire based. Did your, you know, has your dog been exposed to smoke before it got the cancer? Yes, no. And no real kind of idea about the severity of it. But I was concerned because the smoke doesn't just go into the body, it sits on the surface of things, okay? So that's why people who smell of smoke, they've got it in their clothing, okay? So they can take the coat off and hang it up, but if they put it back on, it's still gonna smell of smoke, whether or not they've smoked that moment. And with these animals, it's going into their coat, okay? So we know that these animals lick themselves and therefore are probably licking the smoke off the surface of their skin, which raises an interesting point. Do they like the taste of the smoke on their skin? Do they not like it? Do they like the smell of the smoke on their skin? You know, are they licking more because they've got smoke on their hair and they want to clean themselves of it? And we don't really know much about that. So what have we done? This is, I like to always put a picture of one of our dogs, or this is my daughter from a few years ago, cuddling up to my mother's dog, Kenzo, who's currently staying with us. He's a little bit crazy. He's a lurcher, so he's a Labrador cross greyhound, and he's a classic example of what happens when you breed a dog for smell and for speed. So the Labradors, as has been touched on already today, are really good sniffers. They are brilliant sniffers. Greyhounds, they're brilliant runners. He's a sight hound, so when he sees a deer, he chases it. But if he smells a deer, he chases that too. So basically, you can't stop this dog. He just runs. He can go at 40 miles an hour. He can catch up with a deer, doesn't know what to do with it once he gets there, but he'll get there. And it's quite a nasty combination, because with a sight hound, as long as he can't see anything, you're okay. But he can smell it too. So we are not safe with this dog in any area where there's other animals. So basically what we did was we looked at what's actually going on inside the hair. Now, they've done this a lot in people, so you can assess what's being taken into the body by looking at the hair nicotine concentration, because that's actually becoming embedded within the hair itself. Okay, so if you're a smoker, or any of us who are walking the streets and sniffing up passive smoke from other people, it's becoming embedded in our hair, and we can actually test that. And what we found in the dogs was fairly unsurprising, really, was that if dogs are exposed to cigarette smoke in their homes, they get higher levels of hair nicotine. And that it was very similar to that reported in children in the same environment. So it was important to think that these are actually just like children. They're being exposed in the same way. And that's important when we think, you know, the Scottish government are on the brink of banning smoking in cars when there's a child present. They're not going to ban it if there's a dog present. So that's my kind of particular bugbear. But we think, therefore, that dog hair might be actually an easier way of assessing what's going on in a home in terms of exposure, because it's much easier to take a hair sample from a dog than it is from your child with their big, luscious, long locks that nobody wants to trim. The other big issue, which people don't realise, is that there's also a risk not just from the floaty smoke, but also from the smoke as it falls onto surfaces, into carpets, curtains, and so forth. And this is called third-hand smoke. Now, what is the pet's experience of third-hand smoke? Third-hand smoke is even more carcinogenic than passive smoke that you inhale through the atmosphere, okay, because it's become oxidized by exposure to the environment. And the thinking is now that this is even more carcinogenic, so more likely to induce cancers than direct passive smoking. What's scary is this can stay in the environment in that home for years. People have reported finding third-hand smoke behind roof tiles 10 years after smokers moved out. Okay, so that's actually becoming now a much bigger health issue for people as well. But thinking about the pets and what they experience, they're on the ground. They're right down on the carpet. They're moving around. So what they're experiencing is probably more like what toddlers are experiencing, because they're wandering around on the ground. And equally, they're closer to us. They follow us about. They don't get to go to school. They stay at home, okay? So they're in that environment a lot more, and they're moving about on the soft furnishings and around the house, and therefore kicking up this third-hand smoke. So actually, the smell and the experience for them could be quite dramatic. And we've already touched on the ability to smell much more strongly. What we don't know is, do these animals actually smell this? Can they smell third-hand smoke? And it's a bit of a kind of conundrum, really. We also went on to look at cats, because the thing about cats, we've already shown that they have an increased risk of particular cancers, and one of the cancers, the lymphoma, they can get in their intestines, okay? And so the thinking is there's some sort of environmental toxin that's perhaps predisposing to inflammatory change in the gut, but also then cancer changing. And my thoughts were, well, why couldn't this be smoke, okay, if we know that it increases the risk of this particular type of tumour? So we checked out what cats were doing, and we found that very much the same as dogs in terms of they do get hair nicotine concentrations when they're in smoking households, but they're even higher than dogs. And the theory at the moment is that they groom more, so they're licking themselves all the time. If you think of a dog, it doesn't spend all day grooming itself, whereas a cat is very thorough. Okay, we've all seen the pictures of how far around they can get in all different areas. So they are very thorough about clearing their whole body of anything that's on the surface. Interestingly, people often think, I'm going to smoke outside, don't they? That will change the environment of my home, but if I smoke outdoors, then that's going to change what my animal's exposed to or my child's exposed to. But although smoking outdoors did reduce the hair nicotine concentration, it didn't make it down to a cat that didn't smoke, okay, that wasn't in a smoking house. So it basically meant that that didn't particularly help. We thought maybe if your cat goes outside, because obviously those of you who are not cat owners might not know that some cats get to go outdoors and some cats stay inside, and that's often a function of kind of where you live, the personality of your cat, and how it's been brought up. So having a cat that went outside, you would think that would reduce the amount of smoke that they were taking in. Not a bit of it. Didn't seem to make a difference. Now, do those cats go to other smoking households for the day? Because that's the problem. We don't actually know what our cats are doing when they're out and about. Recent studies have shown they dot about all over the place, and that some cats have 4 or 5 different homes that they go to, and they have food in all these places, and they have different points of the day that they spend at this house and that house. So what are the cats actually doing? We don't know. But just because your cat goes out for most of the day doesn't mean it's going to change that exposure level. So again, a lot of unanswered questions about what they're experiencing. Do they want to go into a smoker's home? Are they seeking out more nicotine? I don't know, is the simple answer. So as vets, what should we say? And I'm sorry, I don't know if odorist is a word, but I was, and you guys probably know better than me because you're much more kind of literally minded. What is a word for somebody who judges someone based on their odour?
I think we can go with odorist.
Is odorist okay? I was like, I can't find anything. I did all these searches on Google. What is the word? There didn't seem to be a word, you know? Obviously, you've got racist and sexist. Anyway, I've decided it's going to be odorist, I guess. So I don't want to be odorist, but this cat came in to see me. This is Hector, and unfortunately, Hector is no longer with us. But as soon as Hector came in, I could smell on the cat that he's really badly exposed to passive smoking. And I know that he's been diagnosed with lymphoma, and I know that by passive smoking, that owner has increased the risk of him developing lymphoma by 2.5 times. What I don't know is, will me asking that change the treatment? What we don't know yet is, does the continued exposure during treatment alter the way the cancer behaves? Does it alter the animal's ability to respond to the treatment? So what should I say? Should I say to this owner, is he a smoker? I know I can smell it on him, so I kind of know that. And will she be offended? I don't know. So the next thing we wanted to try and do is try and find a way of looking and seeing, is there anything that we can do that kind of we can raise with clients before they have cancer? Because that's the embarrassing thing. You know, when your cat, dog's got cancer, you don't want to say, hey, did you do this? Did you do that? Did you feed it this? Because it's too late. They're now stuck with their pet and they're in terrible upset that their animal's going to die of cancer. So we started to look at some of the aging parameters in dogs that were exposed in normal homes. So we took some pet dogs and we castrated them so we could have a look at their testicles. But you know, most dogs get castrated these days, and they got that for free, so that was great. And we, not for the dogs probably, but for the owners. And we found that there was this marker of cell damage that was quite dramatically increased, even though the testicle's quite a bad tissue to get it from, but we wanted to use a tissue that wasn't going to require any sort of animal experimentation. And we found that this marker of cell damage was quite increased in the dogs in the smoking home. So we know now that even early exposure, and these dogs were generally quite young, is changing the cell biology to the exposure. And we also know that this particular marker has been associated with the canine version of lymphoma, and it alters the prognosis and the ability to respond to treatment. And interestingly, we found that dogs that were exposed to passive smoke put on more weight after they were castrated. That was an incidental finding. We didn't know why that was. We didn't check what exercise they were doing. We didn't check their diet. That was not something we were looking for, but that was an interesting little aside. So coming back to Hector, what should we say? Obviously, it's really difficult when we have that smelly cancer patient and that smelly situation. Equally, it's also difficult because how do I know if another cat that doesn't smell has been exposed but is just very good at grooming themselves and keeping themselves clean, or that they're not as exposed as Hector was? So I think the best option for us is to think about changing attitudes. We need to educate owners a bit more about the exposure that they're doing for these animals. And we need to train vets to ask in a very sensitive manner and then try and understand a little bit more why we don't raise the issue when we know that it can't be great on a number of different levels. So probably, you know, as Andrew mentioned, his cat's not got a great sense of smell, and I think I've got a very good sense of smell, but you probably can't rely on your sense of smell to drive questions, because your sense of smell is creating a judgment. And Erica touched on this idea, you know, of smell is a bad thing, smell is a judging thing. If we meet a smelly, you know, person who's homeless, we would judge them, whereas somebody wearing the exact same clothes who doesn't smell, we will have a different opinion of what the way they live and what they do and their sort of value in society. And that's it's a bit of a problem really, isn't it? That we are all fundamentally odorists. We might not vocalize it, but we are fundamentally judging somebody about that perfume's very strong, I don't like that, or that body odor's very strong, I don't like that. But so we can't really rely on our sense of smell as vets to drive the questions. We need to make all our owners aware of the risks of passive smoking and make it part of an annual health check, so, you know, like the doctors do, so they ask every time. We need to do more research so we understand the real risks, but we also need to make sure that vets know the real risks. And we need to review our inherent prejudices. So for me, my sister's a smoker, and it's something that's always pained me. My granny died of smoking-related diseases, and it's always been an issue for me, this idea that smoking is bad. And so I know I have an inherent prejudice. When I smell someone who's a smoker, I think bad. that's bad, you shouldn't be doing that. You know, my children walk down the street and go, oh, disgusting, oh, that person really smells. I'm like, shh, you can't say that, that's rude. And they're like, yeah, but they're a smoker. So there is an inherent prejudice about the way people smell, and if you are a smoker. But then the other side of the coin is, shouldn't we be using all our senses for the benefit of our patient? You know, it's okay to sniff an ear, but why is it not okay to sniff the coat and say, I can smell smoke? You know, so is your animal exposed? And I think, again, that comes down to that inherent prejudice that we have about asking certain questions. So what about what we don't know, and I sort of touched on this earlier, is what is the pet's perception of exposure to passive smoking? Do they like it? Do they get a high from sniffing in the smoke? Because if you think about, we're inhaling the smoke, we're absorbing the nicotine that is the drug, these animals are absorbing the nicotine. Do they like that? My dog, my previous dog, who's subsequently died, sadly, he used to love it when my mother-in-law used to smoke, because when she got the little white stick out, it meant going outside. And so he'd go, yay, yay, she's got the cigarette out, yay, yay, off we go. And she would throw the ball for him while she had her cigarette. So intrinsically, he'd been trained to like smoking, in effect. I don't know whether he enjoyed inhaling the smoke that was around her or not. Or do they hate it? Do they really genuinely hate the smell of the smoke on their bodies? Given that they're so sensitive to scent and that they're so sensitive to the scent of each other, how does this mask it? Does this change? Does one dog judge another dog? You know, you're a smoker, you smell. Or do they not? Do they just accept that as part of the kind of being? And I guess we just don't really know that, how much they like it or how much they don't like it. I think also we need to think about how does it actually directly affect them? Do they see it? Do they feel it on their bodies? Do they understand it? Do they understand that they're being exposed to this odd smell? Do they become used to it? Do they become it's just part of their normal environment, in the same way that my house smells of dog and I don't notice it anymore, and a smoker's house presumably smells of smoke and they don't notice it anymore. Okay. When I was doing a talk about passive smoking to a group of people about smoking, quitting smoking, a sort of health professional group, I had one lady who'd given up smoking because she'd realised that her cat's bed had been stained with the smoke, and it was like horrible brownie colour, and she realised when she stroked the cat with a white cloth that the stuff that coming off was that horrible nicotine staining that you sometimes see on wallpaper and so forth. Is it more important that they have a happy home than whether they are exposed to smoke or not? Is it more important that we love them and care for them, and therefore that a lot of, you know, owners are very heavily reliant on their pets and the pets are heavily reliant on their owners? Is that bond more important than the scent of smell that these animals get through their environment, accepting the risk of cancer because everybody's got to die of something? You know, so does it matter to the dog that they've died at age 5 or 6 instead of age 8 or 9? So, but I guess I'm not really telling you any answers here, I'm just asking a lot of questions. I think to understand why we don't raise this issue, we've got to be able to think it through. And we know we can raise the issue of obesity when we've got an obese owner. That was always a difficult thing and something that we used to look at university a lot. How do you raise the issue of your dog being overweight when the owner's overweight, and is that difficult? And why can't, if we can do that, which must be quite uncomfortable, why can't we raise the issue of the smell of the animal or the smell of the owner? And, you know, as vets, we don't really wear perfume because we know that upsets animals. You know, we don't come to work smelling of perfume, which is why if you meet a vet, they'll always smell a bit doggy, horsey, something like that, because we're not trying to mask it with anything. We think that's all rather nice. And I think we all do have different smells. Is it worse than not raising it? If I don't raise it, am I more odorous or odorist or less odorous if I don't raise it when I smell it? You know, would I be more or less of a racist if I don't raise something that could be, say, skin colour related? I don't know. And do vets who smoke and nurses who smoke have a different approach to this? Do they feel more or less uncomfortable? And what happens about the owners? How do they feel? If I think raising that will make them feel guilty, but maybe they won't. Maybe they won't feel guilty, and we don't know, will they feel guilty? And fundamentally, at the last point, which is the point I always stress, does the pet have a right, a welfare right, if you like, as someone was asking earlier, what about the welfare of the smells and the environment that the animal's raised in? Does a pet have a right to clean air as opposed to smoke contaminated air? And is that philosophy, is that something we should be putting into our five freedoms, that we don't just have the right to freedom from thirst and hunger, but we actually have the right to freedom from polluted air as well? Like, that's all I have to say. Lots of questions.